This episode of The Trail Went Cold is brought to you by our sponsor, Wink, whom we would like to thank for being such a great supporter of our show. Wink is offering our audience members who are over 21 and live in the U.S. a $20 credit plus free shipping on their first order of 4 bottles of wine as a new member of Wink. So please visit trywink.com/cold. That's trywink.com/cold. Thank you and enjoy the show. November 24th, 1956. LaPlace, Louisiana. 46-year-old family man Thomas Hotard and 31-year-old single mother Audrey Moat meet up to continue their secret affair. The following day, Thomas's body is discovered inside his vehicle at a remote swamp area with a shotgun blast to the back of his head. Even though Audrey's clothing is scattered throughout the scene, she has vanished without a trace. 2 decades later, a dying man confesses that his spouse was responsible for murdering the couple and disposing of Audrey's body, but no evidence is found to support his story, and Audrey remains a missing person. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today we're going to explore a cold case from 1956 involving two victims, the murder of Thomas Hotard and the disappearance of Audrey Moat. This story was featured during the first season of Unsolved Mysteries, and is one of my favorite segments from the show because it does a masterful job of capturing the atmosphere of the Louisiana Bayou Country during the 1950s. I thought this would be an ideal time to cover this case because myself and the rest of the Trail Went Cold crew are going on vacation and visiting New Orleans for the first time right after the release of this episode, and New Orleans is only a half hour away from the location where this story takes place. It also turns out that this will be the first Lover's Lane murder we've ever covered on this podcast. The story involves a married father named Thomas Hotard and a divorced mother named Audrey Moat, who had been carrying on a secret affair together for years, and were making out while parked in a remote swamp area before they were violently attacked. What's particularly odd about this crime is that while Thomas was murdered at the scene, Audrey was never found, though the evidence strongly suggests she was abducted. There would be a number of twists and turns in this story over the next few decades, including a deathbed confession, but the full truth about what actually happened to this couple is still a mystery. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is finally on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards from yours truly, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now explore the mysterious case of Audrey Moat and Thomas Hotard. Our story begins in 1956 in the town of LaPlace, Louisiana, located in St. John the Baptist Parish. At around 9 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, November 24th, a fur trapper and his son were walking along Frenier Beach, a secluded swamp area on the shores of Lake Pontchartrain. They passed by a blue four-door sedan and saw a man and woman making out inside. 3 hours later, a hunter walked through the area and saw the sedan in the distance. He noticed that the right rear door was open, and a man appeared to be sleeping in a strange position in the back seat. In spite of this, he did not attempt to investigate. Well, the following day, the same fur trapper and his son returned to Frenier Beach, and were surprised to discover that the sedan was still parked in the exact same spot. They took a closer look, and were shocked to discover that a horrific crime had taken place. The vehicle's front seat folded down into a bed, and a man was lying dead on top of it. Someone had pressed a 16-gauge shotgun directly against the rear window and fired a shot into the back of the man's head at point-blank range. Once the local sheriff was notified and arrived at the scene, he identified the victim as 46-year-old Thomas Hotard, and it was estimated that he had been dead approximately 30 hours. Thomas hailed from the town of Gretna, located 30 miles away just outside New Orleans. A number of articles of women's clothing were inside the car, including a pair of women's shoes. Items from a woman's purse were scattered on the ground outside, including a comb, a vanity case, and some gasoline credit cards, though the purse itself was never found. A set of car keys were also discovered on the ground several feet away, but since the sedan's keys were still in the ignition, these keys had to belong to another vehicle. Footprints from a woman's bare feet were heading away from the sedan, and were spaced far enough apart to indicate that the woman had been running. Tracks which appeared to be from a man's boot could also be seen on the ground, and a piece of a bright plaid sports shirt had been snagged on a bush. The footprints wound up ending at a gravel patch next to a road which led to the main highway, and there was also a single tire track in the gravel that possibly belonged to a motorcycle. There also appeared to be scuffle marks on the gravel, which seemed to indicate that the woman's pursuer had caught up to her. The credit cards found at the scene had the name Audrey M. Hotard on them, so at first glance, it appeared that Thomas had been engaged in sexual activity with his wife, who was now missing from the scene. But there was one problem. Thomas's wife was actually named Beulah Hotard. The couple had been married 25 years and had two children, and Beulah was confirmed to be alive and well at their home in Gretna. Thomas was employed as a safety engineer at the Celotox chemical plant and told his wife he always had to work Saturdays. Beulah became concerned when Thomas didn't return home that night, and was soon shocked to learn he had been shot to death in La Place, apparently while in the company of another woman using his last name. It would turn out that Audrey M. Hotard was actually 31-year-old Audrey Mote, who lived in Baton Rouge. Audrey was a divorced single mother with three children, who worked as a buyer at the Kaiser Construction Company, and her identification badge would be found in Thomas's sedan. Audrey's own vehicle would be discovered in the parking lot of a cafe located 6 miles from the murder scene, and turned out to be a match for the car keys found at Frenier Beach. Like Thomas, Audrey told her family she had to work on Saturdays, but never returned home, so she was officially reported missing. It turned out Thomas and Audrey had been carrying on an affair for years, and that working on Saturdays was just a cover story which allowed them to travel to La Place every weekend for a secret rendezvous. The couple had originally become friends in 1950, when Audrey worked alongside Thomas at Celotox. At one point, the company went on strike, so Thomas allowed Audrey to room at his family's home for 6 months. However, her presence seemed to cause a lot of tension in the household, as Beulah felt that Audrey was always going out of her way to be around Thomas, and made no bones about the fact that she was not too fond of her. Following Audrey's disappearance, Beulah was actually quoted as saying, "She knew she was causing dissension. She wasn't at all attractive, but she was intelligent and seemed well-educated, and she had a way of twisting people around her finger. I hated her." End quote. Even after Audrey left Celotox and went to work for Kaiser, she still kept in touch with Thomas. She was hoping to become a safety engineer herself, so Thomas became her mentor and helped her take a correspondence course. They also both shared an interest in scouting, as Thomas was a scoutmaster for the Boy Scouts, and Audrey led a Girl Scout troop, so the pair often organized scouting trips together. In July of 1955, Audrey suffered a nervous breakdown and told her mother she needed to get away for a while. At the time, Audrey had two children from her ex-husband, George Mote, and her mother agreed to look after them while she went to St. Louis for 5 months. Well, Audrey wound up returning 2 days before Christmas, and to everyone's surprise, she now had a 4-day-old baby girl named Jacqueline. According to Audrey, she had met a couple who had recently given birth to the child and did not want her, so Audrey agreed to adopt her. When Thomas found out, he agreed to sponsor the adoption, and thought it would be a good idea for Audrey to use his last name on some documentation, including their credit cards which were found at the murder scene. Thomas helped out Audrey and Jacqueline whenever he could, and apparently treated the child as if she were her very own, and, well, I'm sure you can probably read between the lines of this so-called adoption. It seems like Beulah was completely unaware about any of this, as 2 weeks before the murder, she had asked Thomas about Audrey, and he claimed he hadn't seen her for a year and a half. Anyway, while Thomas and Audrey were conducting their affair, they selected La Place as their rendezvous point, since it was halfway between where they lived in Baton Rouge and Gretna. On the morning of November 24th, they had both driven separately to a local cafe to meet up before they left together in Thomas's sedan and drove to Frenier Beach. In a cruel twist of fate, this just happened to take place on Audrey's 31st birthday. Investigators briefly pondered the idea that Audrey may have murdered Thomas herself in some sort of lover's quarrel before running off. However, most of her clothing was left behind at the scene, as the only items which were not accounted for were her bra and slip, and the footprints clearly suggested that she was attempting to run away from Thomas's killer. Even though there appeared to be a motorcycle track in the gravel patch, no one from the area could recall having seen or heard a motorcycle in months. An extensive search was performed of the area, with hundreds of National Guardsmen combing the treacherous swamps near Lake Pontchartrain, but it failed to turn up any trace of Audrey. There was one promising eyewitness sighting, which took place at around 1 p.m. on the afternoon of November 24th, when a man who was hunting near Frenier Beach remembered seeing a boat in the distance drifting through Lake Pontchartrain. He thought he saw a woman on the boat who was huddled up as if she was cold, and there was a large man standing by the motor. Given that the weather was cold, the witness found it rather strange that anyone would decide to go boating that day. Apparently, in the months prior to her disappearance, Audrey had told her mother that if anything ever happened to her, she should take her 3 children and leave town, but Audrey never provided any explanation for this. Investigators performed a search of Audrey's desk at her office at Kaiser and found a letter in one of the drawers. The letter was undated, and nothing more than a few rambling sentences, but the last line read, "I will take care of you later." It was signed, "Fathead," but the author was never identified. However, evidence would soon surface which opened up the possibility that Audrey might still be alive. On December 6th, Leah Mote, the mother of Audrey's ex-husband George, received a phone call at her home in New Orleans from a female claiming to be Audrey. She called Leah Mum and said she was in trouble and needed help, but when Leah asked the caller where she was, she abruptly hung up. Now, the interesting thing about Audrey is that she did not have a Louisiana accent because she was originally born in Boulder, Colorado, and spent much of her childhood living in California. According to Leah, the female caller sounded like she had a clipped California accent, so she was pretty certain that it was Audrey's voice. Even though Audrey was divorced from her son, Leah claimed they were still on good terms, as Audrey had visited her a few months before her disappearance. Since Lee was the only person Audrey knew in New Orleans, she theorized that Audrey might have decided to call her if she was in the area and needed help. Around the same time, a waitress came forward and told police she had seen Audrey's photo and recognized her as a woman who recently came into her coffee shop. The woman looked disheveled and was dressed in tattered clothing and only stayed at the establishment for a few minutes until she noticed the waitresses were watching her and abruptly left. Another woman in New Orleans also reported that a nervous-looking woman matching Audrey's description had visited her home to inquire about renting a room and used the telephone while she was there. Though she did not remember the woman's exact name, she had introduced herself by a name which sounded like it might have been Mrs. Mote and claimed she was from Baton Rouge. However, in spite of these developments, the investigation soon hit a complete standstill. Even though Beulah Hotard had shown no qualms about publicly expressing her dislike for Audrey, police never suspected she was involved in the crime, and Audrey's ex-husband George was ruled out as a suspect as well. There would be another development in March of 1959, when Edmund Douay, a shrimper who lived only a few miles away from the murder scene, was arrested for shooting and wounding a woman during a robbery attempt. The victim had been sitting in her car about 5 miles north of La Place, while her husband was fishing. After Douay was captured, a total of 4 women's purses were found in his house and car, one of which matched the description of Audrey's missing purse. Douay's car also matched the description of a vehicle a witness had recalled seeing near Frenier Beach around the approximate time of Audrey's disappearance, and it turned out that Douay had once owned a 16-gauge shotgun, though he claimed it had been stolen. While being questioned about the crime, Douay was administered two lie detector tests and a truth serum test. This apparently prompted Douay to reveal that Audrey's body had been buried in the God Show commissary dump near New Orleans, but a search of the dump turned up nothing. In the end, Douay wound up pleading guilty to the shooting of the other woman and received a 10-year prison sentence, but no evidence ever tied him to Thomas's murder or Audrey's disappearance. So the case hit a standstill again until a very promising lead surfaced during the 1980s. A woman named Marvell Corona came forward to police and revealed that her father, Ernest Acosta, had made a surprising confession shortly before his death. Back in 1956, Ernest was living near LaPlace with his common-law wife, Caroline Slesher. They shared a house on the edge of the swamp and were located only about 3/4 mile away from Frenier Beach. The couple were notorious in the area for being mean, surly gun fanatics who would not hesitate to fire their weapons at anyone who came around their property. Caroline passed away in 1979, and when Ernest became seriously ill and was on death's door 2 years later, he shared a shocking story with his children. He claimed that Caroline had been responsible for the murders of Thomas Hotard and Audrey Mote, and that he helped her cover up the crime. According to Marvell Corona, her father had been visiting his children on the evening of November 24, 1956, when he received an urgent phone call from Caroline demanding that he rush home. Ernest claimed this was because Caroline had shot Thomas and Audrey to death and needed assistance disposing of their bodies. After Ernest and one of their neighbors proceeded to place Thomas's body in his car at Frenier Beach, Audrey's body was hidden inside an iron fish box and kept there until after the National Guardsmen concluded their massive search of the swamp for her. Ernest then stuffed Audrey's body inside an old Civil War cannon and dumped it into the swamp. The alleged motive for this crime was that Audrey and Thomas knew something about Caroline, so she decided to kill them for it. It's unclear what exactly they knew, but Marvell heard that Audrey was distantly related to Caroline in some way. In fact, Thomas and Audrey had both allegedly visited their property to speak with Caroline on at least 2 occasions prior to the murders. Well, of course, Marvell was skeptical about some aspects of her father's story, particularly his claim that both Audrey and Thomas were murdered by Caroline inside their house before he moved Thomas's body back to his vehicle. The evidence clearly showed that Thomas was killed inside his car by a shotgun blast through the window, so Marvell suspected her father might have had a more direct involvement in the murders than he was letting on. Whatever the case, Marvell was given a lie detector test, which indicated that she was being truthful about hearing her father's story, so the investigation would be reopened. Another extensive search was performed of the swamps near Lake Pontchartrain, but once again, they failed to turn up any trace of Audrey's body or a Civil War cannon. By this point, the actual location where the crime took place had been submerged underwater because of erosion and was now 100 yards offshore from Lake Pontchartrain. Even after Unsolved Mysteries aired a segment about the case in March of 1989, it failed to generate any substantial new leads. In February of 2011, a new article was published about the case featuring Audrey's daughter, Decky Mote, who was only 9 years old at the time her mother went missing, and had been interviewed during the Unsolved Mysteries segment. Decky announced that she had submitted her DNA to the authorities in hopes of comparing it to several unidentified human remains which had been collected by the FACES lab at Louisiana State University as part of their missing persons project. She said she was suffering from cancer and did not believe she had much time left, though from my online searches, it appears that Decky has managed to pull through and is still alive today. While the results of these DNA tests were never revealed publicly, I can only assume that none of the remains turned out to be Audrey. So after more than 60 years, the full story behind the murder of Thomas Hotard and the whereabouts of Audrey Mote continue to remain unknown. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, it's about time we propose another toast to our wonderful sponsor, Wink. We're targeting a new generation of wine drinkers who want to do away with the pretense and simply enjoy reasonably priced, great wine. Wink custom tailors wines to the taste of the individual consumer and delivers 3 bottles of wine each month to your doorstep for $39 plus free shipping. When you visit Wink and take their 20-second palate profile quiz, you'll get instant wine recommendations based on your unique profile. The price point for most wines is $13, so by signing up with Wink, you are getting your first bottle for free. Wink is offering our audience members who are over 21 and live in the U.S. a $20 credit plus free shipping on your first order of 4 bottles of wine as a new member of Wink. Your wine delivery will be branded Wink. Wink is the wine club associated with Wink. For this particular toast, we're going to be traveling all the way to South Africa to try a 2017 bottle of their Cape Route Chenin Blanc. It's a new creation from Ernst Storm, a winemaker who splits his time between Santa Barbara and his homeland in South Africa. It's a blend of 2 vineyards from very different climates. The cooler area of Stellenbosch fosters a leaner style, while the warmer area of Robertson promotes bright, ripe fruit flavors. Just like the meandering scenic road it's named for, Cape Route is one of South Africa's best-kept secrets, and it goes really well with fish, salad, and veggies. So to receive a $20 credit and free shipping on 4 bottles of wine just like this one on your first order, go to trywink.com/cold. That's trywink.com/cold. trywinc.com/cold. So let's raise our glasses high and deliver a toast to Wink. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of our show. Well, from a production standpoint, this is definitely one of my favorite Unsolved Mystery segments. The show generally preferred to focus on more recent mysteries, and usually didn't profile cold cases which were decades old, but I'm sure the hook for this story was impossible to resist. We have a married family man and a divorced single mother carrying on a secret love affair for years before one of them is brutally murdered and the other one disappears. As you can imagine, this was an incredibly scandalous story in 1956, and as I'm about to discuss momentarily, Unsolved Mysteries didn't even share some of the more sensational details. But the segment has great production values and does a marvelous job of recreating the 1950s. Back then, the show loved to shoot the reenactments at the actual locations these stories took place in order to give everything an extra air of authenticity, and this segment totally captured the flavor of the swampy Louisiana bayou setting. And say what you will about the quality of the acting in Unsolved Mysteries reenactments, but they totally hit a bullseye when they cast the roles of Ernest Acosta and Caroline Slesher. I wish I knew the names of the actors who played them, but they're pretty awesome, and totally come across as the meanest, surliest backwoods hillbillies you'd ever have the displeasure of encountering, and I can totally picture them pointing a shotgun at people and firing it and screaming, "Get off my lawn!" I have never come across actual photographs of Ernest Acosta or Carolyn Slesher, but the two actors totally drive home the idea that if Thomas Hotard and Audrey Mote ran afoul of these folks, bad things likely occurred. Now, the segment also featured an interview with Wayne Norwood, a deputy sheriff with the St. John the Baptist Parish Sheriff's Office. Norwood took on the case during the 1980s and presented his own theory about Ernest Acosta being the sole perpetrator of the crime, and I think it's a very plausible one. I'll discuss it in a little while, but after doing further research into this case, I discovered there's a lot more to this story than I originally thought, so I want to explore all the different scenarios. Like I just mentioned, Unsolved Mysteries left out some of the juicier details about Audrey's backstory, most especially the odd circumstances of how she had her third child. They mentioned that she was a divorced single mother with 3 children, which, needless to say, was quite unusual for the 1950s, and her daughter Decky described her as an independent woman who was ahead of her time. What they did not mention was that only 2 of these children were from Audrey's ex-husband, and that her youngest daughter suddenly appeared out of nowhere after Audrey suffered a quote-unquote nervous breakdown and went off on her own to St. Louis for 5 months. When she returned home, Audrey surprised everyone by appearing with a newborn baby girl whom she had supposedly adopted from a couple who did not want the child. Now, I don't know if people really bought into that story back in 1955, but looking at it from today's perspective, it's pretty obvious what actually happened. Thomas accidentally got Audrey pregnant, she disappeared to another state for 5 months to give birth, and then came up with a fictitious adoption story in order to explain why she had a new baby. As you can imagine, having a love child out of wedlock as the result of an affair with a married man would have been a huge scandal during this time period. It sounds like Thomas took a genuine interest in the child, and when you consider that he was allowing Audrey to use Hotard as her last name, you have to wonder if Thomas was eventually planning to leave his wife for her. It's certainly interesting to go back and read the original newspaper articles about the case, and see how Beulah Hotard did not pull any punches when talking about how much she disliked Audrey. She flat out used the words, "I hated her," even though she was referring to a woman who was missing and had likely been murdered. When you look at the circumstances of how Thomas and Audrey had been carrying on their affair for years, and that she likely bore his child, it's easy to believe that Beulah might have been responsible for this crime. But right from the outset, investigators established that they did not consider Beulah a suspect, and felt the same way about Audrey's ex-husband, George. You have to remember that when Thomas and Audrey were carrying on their affair, they pretty much stuck to the same routine. They would always travel to the same cafe in Laplace to meet up every Saturday morning, and it sounds like they always went to the same secluded Lover's Lane spot at Frenier Beach. Even though the crime took place at a pretty remote location, it wouldn't have been difficult for anyone who knew about the affair and the routine to follow them there. Now, even though the evidence strongly suggests that Audrey was abducted, there were a few eyewitness sightings to give off the idea that she might have still been alive following her disappearance, such as the waitress who thought she saw Audrey in the New Orleans coffee shop, and the woman who thought that Audrey had attempted to rent a room from her house. Well, I've seen enough missing persons cases with mistaken eyewitness sightings to believe that's probably what happened here, and that the witnesses probably interacted with a similar-looking woman who wasn't Audrey. However, the phone call to Audrey's former mother-in-law, Leah Mote, is a bit more interesting. It struck me as odd that Audrey would call her ex-husband's mother if she was in trouble, particularly since she had a very close relationship with her own mother. But they figured that Audrey might have called Leah for help if she ended up in New Orleans, because Leah was the only person she knew there. I would be inclined to think the call was just a prank, since Audrey's disappearance made headlines throughout the state. But it is weird that a prankster would choose to phone Audrey's former mother-in-law, who didn't even live in the same city as her. How many people would have even known about her connection to Audrey, as I don't see any indication that Leah was ever mentioned in any of the news stories until after the call took place. But even though Leah seemed certain that it was Audrey's voice on the line, I have my doubts it was her. Unless Audrey was being held captive somewhere for weeks, and managed to get to a phone and call for help, I don't think she survived very long after Thomas was murdered. Virtually all of her clothing and personal possessions were left behind at the murder scene, so she was most definitely abducted by the same person who shot Thomas. One detail I've always found odd is how even though the contents of Audrey's purse were found scattered on the ground, the purse itself was never found. I could see the perpetrator possibly wanting to keep it as a memento, but the evidence showed that Audrey was running for her life from her attacker before they caught up with her and there was a struggle. Throughout all this, would the killer have bothered to grab and hold on to Audrey's purse? That's why Edmund Douay seemed like a promising suspect when he was arrested for shooting and wounding another woman in the area in 1959 and was discovered to have several women's purses in his possession, one of which matched the description of Audrey's missing purse. I know that Dewey allegedly confessed under the influence of truth serum that he had buried Audrey's body in a dump, but nothing was found. Of course, there's a reason you never hear about truth serum in police investigations anymore. It was only 4 years after this when the United States Supreme Court ruled that confessions produced by truth serum were unconstitutionally coerced and inadmissible, so I certainly wouldn't take Dewey's alleged confession as solid evidence that he committed this crime, especially when you consider that he was a black man being questioned about the murder of a white woman in the South in 1959. Besides, the circumstances of the crime Dewey was convicted for were much different, as he shot a woman in the shoulder during a robbery attempt, may not have been intending to kill her, which is not quite the same as shooting a man in the back of the head through a car window. So without any conclusive evidence to link him to Audrey's case, I'm inclined to think Douay wasn't actually involved in what happened to her. Anyway, the main theory put forward by Wayne Norwood on Unsolved Mysteries involved Ernest Acosta committing the crime on his own. While investigators were convinced that Marvell Corona was telling the truth about hearing her father confess to the crime, that doesn't necessarily mean the story he shared was the truth. Even though Ernest told his children that Caroline Slesher murdered Thomas and Audrey, and that he merely helped her dispose of the bodies, there were a number of discrepancies in his story, particularly his claim that Thomas was killed in their house before his body was placed back inside his vehicle. While Wayne Norwood's theory is that Ernest wanted to clear his conscience before he died and reveal what he had done, but he did not want to flat out admit to his children that he was a murderer, which is why he fudged the facts and passed the blame on to Caroline. In actuality, Norwood believes that Ernest himself was the killer and that it was a sex crime. Since Thomas and Audrey always parked at that same secluded spot every Saturday morning whenever they had sex, and Ernest lived less than a mile away, there's a good chance he had seen them there before. He eventually decided that he wanted Audrey for himself, so on the morning of November 24th, Ernest shot Thomas inside the car and then chased after and abducted Audrey before taking her to another location to rape and murder her. While it's possible that Caroline could have helped Ernest cover up the crime and dispose of Audrey's body, she very well may have not had any involvement at all. It might seem strange that Ernest would go to the trouble of hiding Audrey's remains since he killed Thomas and left his body out in the open, but there are two possible reasons for this. A. He held Audrey captive at his home for a protracted period of time so he could repeatedly assault her, or B. He didn't want his common-law wife to find out about it. It sounds like Caroline was a pretty scary woman, and Ernest may have believed she would become angry if she found out the crime was sexually motivated and that he had his way with another woman. As far as I'm concerned, Norwood's theory is a very believable one, but there are some things which make me wonder if there might be more to this story. If Ernest Acosta was the killer, Thomas and Audrey could have very well been taken by complete surprise when he showed up and fired the fatal shot into Thomas's head, but there seems to be some indication that they knew him and his spouse beforehand. According to Marvell Corona, the couple stopped by Ernest and Caroline's home on at least two occasions prior to the murders. She also heard that Audrey was related to Caroline somehow, and that her and Thomas knew something about Caroline which led to them being killed. The one thing I'm not entirely clear about is if Marvell herself was actually present when Audrey and Thomas stopped by the house, or if this was simply something her father told her. I get the impression that Ernest's children were not living with him and Caroline at this time, so it very well could be the latter. If Marvell personally saw Audrey and Thomas at the house, that would be one thing, but if we're only taking Ernest's word for it, then it might not be true, and it's just his way of making it sound like Caroline had motive to commit the murders, even though he was actually responsible. All that being said, Audrey did tell her mother on one occasion that if anything ever happened to her, she should take the children and leave town. She said this months before the crime took place, so this would imply that Audrey felt that something was wrong and believed her life could potentially be in danger. So could this statement have had anything to do with Ernest and Caroline? I pondered the idea that perhaps Caroline or Ernest found out about Audrey's secret affair with Thomas and had been blackmailing them into staying silent. Given the close proximity of the couple's home to Frenier Beach, it's not implausible that they could have caught Audrey and Thomas in the act at some point. But the more I thought about it, the less likely it seemed that Audrey had any previous connection to Ernest or Caroline. If Audrey was fearful of them, why would she and Thomas keep traveling to La Place every weekend for their secret rendezvous? Why would they keep parking at that same location to have sex when it was in such close proximity to Ernest and Caroline's home? I'm not sure what the context was when Audrey said the "if anything happens to me" line to her mother, but I have a feeling it did not have anything to do with her affair. If Audrey felt her life was in danger because of her involvement with Thomas, it seems strange that she would not deviate from the routine and continue meeting Thomas at the exact same location at the exact same time every weekend. I know they found a letter in Audrey's desk at work, which said, "I will take care of you later," and was signed Fathead. I have no idea if there's any significance to that letter, but it could be nothing more than a red herring. It might be related to something which had nothing to do with the affair or the murder. The fact of the matter is that I'm not sure why Ernest Acosta would make a deathbed confession to a 25-year-old cold case unless there was some truth to it. I sometimes hear about convicted killers falsely confessing to crimes they didn't commit while inside prison because they've got nothing left to lose at that point and want to garner some more attention, but Ernest had nothing to gain by making a confession like this to his own children. So unless he wasn't of sound mind when he confessed, which is certainly a possibility, I definitely think he was involved. It's just a matter of whether he did it alone, or if his spouse was also involved. All things considered, I'm kind of surprised that Ernest wasn't looked at as a suspect in the early stages of the investigation. He lived in close proximity to the murder scene, and was notorious for having a violent temper, and firing guns at people who set foot on his property. He seems like the perfect candidate to shoot someone in the back of the head through a car window. What's interesting is that some of the early newspaper articles I uncovered about this case, which were published in the days following the murder, made mention of the fact that police were questioning a 58-year-old man. They did not identify him by name, but said he was a moss picker who lived in a camp-like structure several hundred yards away from the murder scene and owned a shotgun which had recently been fired. Could they have been referring to Ernest Acosta? I actually found Ernest on the Find a Grave website, and according to his birth date, he would have been 57 at this point, though the paper could have been wrong about the exact age. If this moss picker was Ernest, it sounds like he didn't give the police the impression he was involved at the time. If Ernest was the perpetrator, I've always wondered how he was able to abduct Audrey, particularly since his house was 3/4 of a mile away. The only sign of another vehicle possibly being at the scene was the presence of what appeared to be a motorcycle track, but it's unclear if Ernest owned a motorcycle at that time, and it's a difficult form of transportation to use when you're abducting someone. However, I find the eyewitness sighting from the hunter who saw a man and a woman in a boat drifting on Lake Pontchartrain that afternoon to be quite interesting. He found it very unusual for a boat to be on the water at that time because of the chilly weather, and thought that the woman looked huddled up because she was cold. Given that most of Audrey's clothing was left behind in Thomas's car, and she may have been wearing nothing more than a bra and a slip at this point, it would make sense if she was freezing. So I wonder if the witness saw Ernest and Audrey in the boat together, and if Ernest used the boat to travel to and from the murder scene. According to Ernest, he was out of town visiting his children on the evening of November 24th when he received a phone call from Caroline demanding that he come home and help her dispose of the bodies. I wonder if it can be verified that Ernest was with his children on this particular night, but given that he didn't share his story until nearly 25 years after the fact, they probably wouldn't have even remembered by that time. But Ernest still could have committed the murders on the morning of the 24th, hidden Audrey's body, and traveled to see his children that same night, as Thomas's body was not discovered until the following day. The one part of Ernest's story which comes across as believable is his claim that he hid Audrey's body inside an iron fish box until the massive search effort for her had concluded and he decided to place her body inside a Civil War cannon and dump it into the swamp. That rings true to me because the search of the swamps following Audrey's disappearance was pretty extensive, so I have a feeling they would have found her body if it was there, especially if it was inside a cannon. Those swamps seem like an ideal place to dispose of a body if no one's actively searching for one. I know they performed another search 3 decades after the fact, but by this point, so much had changed as erosion had caused the original crime scene to be engulfed by the lake. So if Audrey's body was put into a watery grave over 60 years ago, who knows where it might be today? Unfortunately, if Ernest's story is true, I think that it will be very difficult, if not outright impossible, to recover Audrey's remains after all this time. While I can't rule out the possibility that Caroline Schlesher was involved in the murders, or at the very least, helped dispose of the bodies, I think the theory presented by Wayne Norwood sounds pretty spot on, and that Ernest Acosta murdered Thomas and abducted Audrey because he wanted to rape her before he proceeded to kill her too. I can only imagine the sheer terror Audrey must have felt as she immediately went from engaging in sex with her lover to seeing him get shot in the head, forcing her to immediately flee the vehicle and run for her life while a man with a shotgun pursued after her. I hope that Audrey did not suffer for too long, and that Ernest did not keep her alive and hold her captive for an extended period of time before she was killed. Of course, anyone who had involvement or knowledge of this crime is long dead by now, so no one will ever be prosecuted, but the best way to offer full closure for Audrey's family would be to recover her remains. So if you happen to have any information about the disappearance of Audrey Moat or the unsolved murder of Thomas Hotard, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you have a moment, please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We've released some exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and we'll be releasing another new one this month, so to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to take a moment to give a shout-out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon, and they are Elizabeth V, Rachel O, Sarah G, Cara D, John T, Lynn B, and Gail R. Thank you so much for your support. And in case you haven't heard, the entire Trail Went Cold crew, McGill, Vince Nitro, and myself, are going to be vacationing in New Orleans this weekend, and if you'd like to meet us, we're holding a small listener get-together on Saturday, August the 11th at 6 p.m. at the Carousel Bar and Lounge at the Hotel Monteleone, located in the French Quarter on 214 Royal Street. That's this Saturday, August 11th at 6 p.m. at the Carousel Bar and Lounge. So if you're going to be in the area that night, feel free to let us know and come join us. I also just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. Like I mentioned in the intro, the three of us will be in New Orleans this coming weekend from August 10th to the 12th, so if any of you listeners happen to be in the area, maybe we'll see you there. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. So we're off to New Orleans, and all the rest of you have yourself a great week, and join us next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶